The stay and defend or go early type policy is actually a national policy. So it's actually been adopted by the Australasian Fire Authorities Council. And so a variety of rural fire services around the nation have actually picked up the same type of information. So it's basically all about making that decision to stay and defend, that pre-planned work before the fire danger season starts, and making sure that your house basically becomes a flame and ember proof box, and then someone from your family or your household staying on site and defending the property. So making sure that after the main fire front passes, that there's no other risk of fire impacting upon that house.
It's not an easy decision to make, obviously, if there's a fire front coming down on top of you, but it's a decision that you really need to make several hours before even the fire gets close, isn't it?
Very much so. It's probably a decision you need to make at the beginning of the fire danger season. And also it's doing that risk assessment too on the day. If the fire behaviour is concerning you and you don't think that you're going to be able to defend, then go early.
The decision to stay and defend is one that you've got some research through about recently. A lot of people weren't really expecting what was going to happen. And obviously if you haven't been through a bushfire, then you're not going to know what's ahead of you. What can they expect if they do decide to stay and defend their property?
Fires are starting to bite a lot harder and a lot quicker. We used to advocate 45 minutes for setup from anecdotal information received from the Mount Bold fire in 2005. Some families, between when they saw smoke and decided to implement their bushfire action plan, which was to stay and defend, they basically had 6 minutes from when they went down to the dam to start the pump. A gentleman actually reported having the fire chase him up to the house. So that's the other thing, is fires are biting hard. During the actual fire itself, it's very hot, poor visibility. When flame impacts you or you're in a fire environment, it also sucks the oxygen, so it could be hard to breathe. So that's why we sort of say stay in your house, because that at least provides some form of breathable environment. It's also that case of having to go out there afterwards. If your property's been significantly impacted by a fire, then it's walking out there and seeing a completely different landscape in some respects. And then it's obviously the hard work you do as you go around patrolling your property and patrolling your property for some time, because all it takes is one ember, one spark, one smouldering piece of flammable material. If that goes undetected, that certainly increases that risk of significant damage being done to your property and houses, and potentially your life and the safety of other loved ones.
That's one thing that I suppose we do think about, particularly with this, is are you physically fit enough to do it? Is it also something you should consider, are you psychologically fit enough to do this?
Most definitely. Some of the statistics and some of the research that's been done on the stay and defend policy or go early, done by the Cooperative Research Centre, which is coordinated by CSIRO, people who've already been through a fire once are seriously starting to reconsider whether they'd actually do it again, because it's had such a psychological impact on them and it's been so physically demanding. They've actually started to improve their bushfire action plan to make sure that they can actually set and forget their property. So they've made it a bark and ember proof the property as best they possibly can. They've set up the sprinklers, they've pressed the button and they let the sprinklers go off automatically, and then they'll come back after the danger has passed, and hopefully if everything falls into place, they'll actually have assets, property, etc. to continue to protect, patrol and look after.
You look around your house and everything in it's replaceable, but the people really aren't. So you've got to take that into account, because it does get that serious when you look at these kind of situations.
Correct. And I mean, unfortunately, and this is a little bit morbid, but however, the research and the reports done on the Whangarei fires on the west coast in January 2005, only one person actually opted to stay in their house out of all the deceased. The rest of them decided to evacuate early. And because the conditions were horrendous out on the road, poor visibility, panic, all those types of things, unfortunately, their safety was compromised, and ultimately it cost them their life, and that's a very sad thing to hear about.
When you're talking earlier about the time frame that you've got for fires, that we were saying that 45 minutes was a good time frame, and now in some circumstances the fire's been upon people for 6 minutes. When you deviate from the stay and defend side of things and you look at the go early, what would you actually recommend as a go early situation now? Like, how early should people be really thinking about heading off?
Ultimately, the purists would say on the day that a severe fire danger day is declared, relocating the family down into the city or with a family elsewhere, the fire risk is of a lesser nature. You wouldn't want to leave any later than about the time we start providing the bushfire information messages on a bad day. Once we put out that bushfire information message through 891, etc., that's about the time where you'd actually want to make that decision to definitely implement your bushfire action plan. When the bushfire warning message is implemented, or when you've got poor visibility and you've got embers landing on you, not a good time at all. You basically need to bunker down in your property.
And that's a dangerous point too, I suppose, because that's when panic sets in. People jump in the cars and they think, maybe I can outrun the fire, or maybe I can get away from where it is at the point. One of the big problems that's come out in the last couple of years is the toxicity of what's inside a car when it burns is horrendous.
They're finding that being in your vehicle during a bushfire is probably slightly better than actually being on foot. Again, it's not a very pleasant place. It's an unnecessary risk, I think, to be in your vehicle.
When we come to emergency warnings and things like that, that a lot of people think, oh, it'll never happen to me, it's just shock tactics, da-da-da-da-da. But realistically, I suppose you've got to be able to sit in your house and look around at all the family members and feel comfortable not living with them anymore, because that's what can happen.
Yeah, ultimately that's what that can happen, is that, you know, you can have people that you care about severely injured or ultimately may lose their life. So it's a big gamble. If you go back to Canberra and those types of things, is that it was a domestic suburb where there was lots of mulch on the ground and flammable doormats against doors and types of things, and people decided to leave early, but there was no one to defend those properties, but they didn't do the cleanup. So it was the doormat, it was the embers entering air conditioning ducts and gutters and all those types of things that unfortunately set those houses alight. It wasn't the actual direct impact of a fire front. It was all embers that was coming out of the adjacent forest to those suburbs.
With that in mind, if you do decide to go early, is it always a good idea to do the quick whip around the place before you go and say, right, that's flammable, either put it inside the house or try and dispose of it, or, you know, basically get it out of an area where it can catch fire?
Those things like the furniture, your deck chairs, your outdoor settings and stuff like that, move them inside or move them out into the yard so that they don't impact upon the house. Have that clean up. Once you're finished using your open fires, if you've got them, move all that wood away from the house and put them up in the backyard where it's not going to impact upon your assets, those types of things. Going through and make sure that you've actually got your plants and garden beds alongside your house pruned and managed so that if they were to be ignited, it's not going to be such a significant fire.
I was just reading in one of your brochures that you've got readily available at your CFS agencies. They say when you're designing a property that you should try and put things like wood sheds and general vehicle sheds on an eastern side of a house. Is there any particular reason for that?
Anything that's facing that sort of northern aspect, so predominantly our summer winds come from the north, so having them on that eastern or western aspect isn't going to put them in the direct path of the fire front. Also, by having them upslope and away from your house as opposed from downslope also is of benefit.
There is so much information out there that people can feel a little bit overwhelmed about it, but the more you read, the better off a chance is going to get if you do unfortunately get caught in a fire situation.
Way in which we've released our publicity and promotional material about the fire danger season is that it's straight and to the point, so it's not pages and reams of paper. It's actually a simple brochure or two that you can pick up and gloss over, read. It also provides those linkages where you can speak to your local council bushfire prevention officers or people within our organisation to provide that sort of extra support by ringing a 1300 line or even using our website. So there's lots of information for people to absorb, but we're making it easier for people to absorb.